Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do.
Hello, I'm Boris Prigmore for the RepChat Inside Stories series. Today, I have the great pleasure of talking with Kiriana Bowles, also known or goes by Kiri, who joins me from West Coast of the United States. Kiri is a supremely talented watercolor artist. She makes amazing portraits, usually representing some sort of inner pain or disability that the person has. And so, yeah, so I understand you've been doing that for quite a number of years now, and they're rather excellent pieces. So I look forward to finding a bit more about it. But perhaps you can tell us a bit more about yourself and your work, please, Kiri.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in Southern Oregon, and I personally developed chronic pain when I was around 12 years old. And so that was very challenging for me. I was in school at the time, and it really limited what I was able to do physically. So I was sort of struggling with that through high school as well. And in high school, I started doing these self-portraits that I think at the time didn't fully realize were about my chronic pain. But looking back on it, it's clear to me that that's what I was doing. And that really helped. It felt very cathartic for me to have some sort of visual representation of this invisible pain that I was dealing with. So then when I went to university, that kind of got challenging in different ways. As a student with a disability, there's not always great accommodations. And so I was having a really hard time at university, just trying to keep up with all my coursework and having professors not really understand what I was dealing with. I look healthy. So it's hard sometimes to have people really understand that there's other stuff going on. And so then when I was in university, I think for the first time, I really was very cognizant about the fact that I was starting to make self-portraits about my chronic condition. And it just sort of opened things up for me in a big way. And at the time, like I was saying, I was not doing great with my mental health. So I was trying to get this support group started at the university for students with disabilities, and took a really, really long time, I think 2 years fully, to get that started. But when I finally did, it sort of clicked into me that I wanted to work with other people who had chronic conditions as well. So I started doing portraits of my fellow students that had chronic conditions. And I turned that into a thesis show. And I've just kept doing it since graduating several years ago. It's really fulfilling work. I think not only for me as someone dealing with chronic pain, having conversations with people who really understand what that's like through the work, but also just, I think there's something to having a visual representation of these invisible conditions that it's like an added difficulty to not be able to see it. And I think for me, and from what I've heard from the people that I've worked with, some sort of visual articulation of that can be really cathartic.
Maybe you could talk a bit about the art so they get a visual representation in their minds, as it were.
Yeah. It's kind of complicated to explain. I often am like, I just have to show you on my phone. But basically what the portraits look like is kind of, they're fairly realistic portraits, but then there's like a surreal element that comes into them that is supposed to represent whatever the subject's symptoms are. So I have one where the subject has fibromyalgia and Crohn's disease, and she wanted to represent the fibromyalgia with like butterflies covering her body. That's actually the symbol for fibromyalgia. And then the Crohn's disease, we had like the caterpillars of the butterflies sort of eating away at her stomach. So you can see that in the portrait, which sort of gives that visual to the symptoms that she's experiencing. Obviously, she has a lot of stomach pain with the Crohn's disease, and then really, really major joint pain that comes with fibromyalgia. So that's kind of how we represented that in that piece. And all the other pieces have those sort of surreal elements that I'm also, another piece to it is that I'm careful that I want the portraits to really feel authentic to the subjects. So I don't come up with whatever the visual representation is. I kind of lead them through a bit of a visualization process in the interview that I do with them before the portrait. And I have them come up with a way that they feel accurately represents their symptoms. And so that's another interesting piece for me, is just hearing whatever people come up with in terms of how they want to articulate that through the work.
Yeah. And I saw on your website that 60% of adults will live with a chronic condition. So it's really very common.
It's super common. It's amazing. I think when I started trying to get the support groups running, I really started realizing how many people are dealing with something chronic. And a lot of people don't even really think about it. You know, they had maybe a soccer injury when they were younger, and that just never really fully healed. So they have chronic knee pain or something like that. And it's just shockingly prevalent. I think it's become kind of an epidemic.
Your love of watercolor and art, you trained even very young, from what I remember.
Yeah, I went to a Waldorf school when I was younger, and they start you on watercolor really since day one. I started with Waldorf when I was about 8. So that's when I started working with watercolor for the first time. And I would do art before that, but not in a very controlled way. So Waldorf kind of traditionally trains you in watercolor to some extent, but not with a lot of freedom for what you're working with.
Mm-hmm. Forgive my ignorance. What's a Waldorf school?
Of course. Yeah. Waldorf is interesting. It's kind of like an alternative school in the United States. It's very alternative. It's actually comes from Germany. There was a man named Rudolf Steiner who came up with this philosophy around education that was based more around like psychology and childhood development. And it's much more arts-based, I think, than standard schooling is here. So I think when my parents saw that I was sort of starting to lean towards creative work when I was younger, they thought, well, Waldorf might be a good solution instead of sticking her into public school that doesn't have as much art focus. So that's kind of what Waldorf is like. It's a lot of art and kind of less traditional schooling.
Your parents, it sounds like a supportive, and I read that they were psychotherapists, is that right?
Yeah, they're both psychotherapists.
And how is it being a psychotherapist's child? Is it how I imagined that they do experiments on you, or am I confusing different
Yeah, it's funny. I get that kind of question a lot with them. I think, you know, we have these sort of stereotypes of what psychotherapists are like, and some of that is accurate. They're very intuitive, and they kind of can figure out when something's going on with me, but I'm really grateful to have grown up with both of them. They're, like you said, they're very supportive, and I think that that comes partially from just the training that they've had, but they also just, they instilled communication skills in me and my brother at an early age, which I think for the most part has been a blessing, and just has given us tools that a lot of our peers have not had, learning how to communicate with others in an effective way. So I'm really grateful that they both are in that line of work, and I think it also makes them very compassionate people.
Well, that sounds good. It gets my vote. I mean, I'm a coach as well. And so, I absolutely think what you're saying is gold. And so obviously your parents are a really big influence on your life. And how about artistically, like out there, your influences, what have you got out there?
That's a great question. I've had a hard time finding artistic influences. I actually find myself drawn to really abstract work for the most part. So it's sort of like, I think of it as like an artist. It's always greener, you know, the grass is always greener somewhere else. So abstract work to me is just really fascinating, and it's not something that I'm really able to do. And so in terms of inspirations for myself, I've just had a hard time finding people that I feel like are doing something kind of similar. You know, there's like Frida Kahlo is kind of the most obvious example, but she worked with oil and with a really different style. So that's, I mean, the other part of it is that I work with watercolor, and that's just not a very common medium these days. So there's not really one person that I look to as an inspiration, or even a number of people that I look to as an inspiration. It's kind of, I feel as though the more I expose myself to art in general, the more I feel inspired. And it's just sort of being around like creative energy that really stokes my fire.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I can see that. Well, having seen your paintings, I mean, they are really beautiful. The quality of the work is great. And then it's got this very natural look. And as you say, this sort of surreal, I don't know, mushrooms appearing or butterflies or crystals. Really, really fantastic and really worth seeing. And what are you working on at the moment?
Yeah, so right now I am actually preparing for a show I have coming up in January. And it's a kind of like duo show with another artist that I know. And so we are just in the process of prepping some work for that. We've got a collaborative piece that we're working on. And then I personally am working on some stuff that is kind of just pushing the envelope a little bit for me. I wanted to have some things that were not as traditional portraits, you know, kind of mix it up a little bit in the exhibition. So I've got a couple pieces that I'm working on that are more pushing towards multimedia. I've started doing that a little bit in like a recent self-portrait has some multimedia aspects to it. And I'm really interested in kind of exploring how to bring that into the more traditional watercolor painting, because sometimes it gets a little boring just to be working on paper. So I like to kind of add things to that.
Fantastic. And what are you most proud of, would you say, Kiri?
Oh, that's a good question too. Really the most fulfilling part of this whole thing and the bit that makes me feel good about my work is just hearing people's feedback. Obviously, I get to hear my subjects' feedback on the portraits, but I also, you know, I've tried to have a social media presence. And so I hear people responding through social media as well. And I think of my work as being kind of like the influence is sort of threefold. So I want it to be primarily a cathartic experience for the subject. You know, they get to see their pain articulated in some way that validates it for them. It's such an invalidating process in a lot of ways to have a chronic condition. So I really want to validate and make them feel seen. And then secondarily, I also really want people who have chronic conditions to see the work and feel seen through that as well. You know, they get to see someone being represented that maybe has a similar condition or the same condition as them. And I want people to feel like they can connect to that and they see themselves being represented essentially. And then the sort of third objective is that I want to sort of start a conversation about chronic conditions and ableism that I feel like the conversation has not fully been started yet, at least in the United States. There's still so much difficulty that people with disability face here. And so I hope that my work can kind of bring some awareness to that. And so I feel like some of those things are sort of falling into place. And I do get good feedback from people feeling like they've been validated and like they've been represented in the work. And so that's really, to me, kind of the most important aspect of it.
And what have you learned or what have you been learning since you started? What were your takeaways, would you say?
So many things. I think, you know, I've been working hard to really feel like I'm educating myself on all the aspects of ableism in this country and just how deep that goes for people with disabilities. You know, I'm lucky that I am able to do some things with my life, and my disability doesn't completely make me bedridden, but that's certainly not the case for a lot of people. And there's so many challenges and really like kind of enforced poverty on people with disabilities in this country. So I've learned a lot about that, which I think helps me be a better advocate. And then there's also just the aspect of learning how to manage it myself. You know, I developed my condition when I was really young. And even though it's been a long time, it's been over half my life that I've been dealing with chronic pain, it's still not something that I totally know how to handle. And I think that with working with other people, I get to see how beautifully they're handling their conditions. And it really inspires me and helps me sort of have hope and have fortitude with my own condition.
Yeah. So inspiring each other along the way, it seems.
And yeah. Supporting, I think, you know, there's the community aspect that I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. Here's your chance, I suppose. Ableism, I'm not very aware of it. I mean, my best friend, though, has terrible migraines, is bedridden for ages. So I can relate, but maybe you could say a bit more here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, from what I've seen, a lot of people don't even really know what ableism means. And it's just like any other form of oppression. You know, it's like an oppression that a specific group of people experiences. And in this case, it's people with disabilities. You know, we say sexism for oppression based on gender, and racism for oppression based on race. And ableism is people that are dealing with either visible or invisible disabilities. And, you know, I think it's a societal thing. So obviously there's going to be variations from culture to culture, but in the US, we really do not do a good job with it. There's very little government support for people that can't work normal hours or work at all. There's just a level of misunderstanding, I think, at a social level, peer to peer, that is really hard to deal with. There's so many situations day to day that I think you kind of run into as someone with a disability, where you're like, okay, this person does not understand what this means, and they aren't accommodating, or they aren't understanding. They're often not kind. And I think also, you know, we don't have a great idea of what disability means in this society. There's a lot of prejudice as to what disability should or shouldn't look like. So there's sort of added challenges with either having an invisible disability, or, you know, different challenges with having a visible disability. So it's a really nebulous thing. And I think it, in some ways, at least for me, for what I've experienced, can be more challenging than the condition itself. It's just, you're running into problems so frequently with peers, with medical people, with professors or people at work. And that can be so much more challenging than trying to even just manage the pain. So I think it's something that, it's a conversation that we just need to start having. You know, we need to uplift the voices of people that are dealing with chronic conditions and disability and hear what it is that they need to change.
Thanks for that. And thanks for your art helping in its way to make that invisible visible and in such a beautiful way. And I'm wondering, you've had pain for more than half of your life, how has your relationship to pain changed over time, if indeed it has?
It's complicated, I think, for me. It changes too. I feel like there's a huge aspect of developing a chronic condition or a disability that is really just like a grieving process. And with a grieving process, it doesn't really go away. You know, you don't get to a point where you've fully accepted it or feel okay with it. There's still a lot of times in my life where I wish that I was physically capable to do things that I would have been able to before this all started for me. So I think that, you know, sometimes it changes day to day. Overall, I think I understand it better. You know, I was so young when it started. I really didn't know what I was getting into, obviously. And there's a level of kind of, I don't really want to call it acceptance that comes with it. It's more like hopelessness, I think, of just the continuation of something that you initially hoped would stop. And, you know, that's obviously something that varies from person to person, depending on their diagnosis. But for me, I had a long time of just hoping that it was going to go away and I was going to go back to normal. And I think now that I'm older, that's something I feel less hopeful about. But at the same time, I have better skills now to handle the grief of losing my mobility. And I also just have spent a long time trying to cultivate a community for myself of people that do understand what I'm going through and aren't going to invalidate my experience. So I think, you know, just being able to tackle the emotional part of it is really important and is something that has definitely changed throughout the years. I've gotten to a much better place with it, and it doesn't make me as sad as it used to, I think.
Thank you for that answer, and sorry it was a difficult question. So on a lighter note, tell me about your work day. What does a day in the life of look like?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's kind of an embarrassing question. I am so all over the place sometimes. So I guess for the last year, this has been the first time that I've really gotten the chance to kind of work full time on being an artist. The pandemic has kind of given me that opportunity, slash also moving home and not having as many bills as I used to. So I used to be really just running around. I was working like 3 or 4 jobs before the pandemic, and I would kind of squeeze in art between things when I could. But for the past while, it depends sort of what I'm working on. When I'm working on a project, I will usually start working earlier in the day. And I kind of, you know, there's various aspects to being an artist. So you think that, you know, you're just sitting around painting all the time, but obviously there's like the social media stuff and there's answering emails and there's all of this sort of computer work that goes into it that is not my favorite. So oftentimes early in the day, I'll start with the computer work and I'll fix a thing on my website or respond to an email or try to do something with social media. And that takes up a fair amount of time. And then from there, I'll start painting, which is kind of, I like to dangle that at the end of the computer stuff because the painting bit is what I actually like to do. So if I kind of put that at the end as a reward, it helps me get through things. And then, you know, with painting, people talk about like flow state, which is really, I think, a real thing. You kind of start working and you lose track of time and you don't know what's happening. And suddenly it's 5 p.m. and you never had lunch. So I can definitely get into that space, but I try to sort of break up my day and make sure that I'm not working too much and also being hard on my body. It's hard for me to sit for long periods of time. So that's something I think about too.
So you mentioned COVID there, so it sort of freed up space, as it were. But how else has it impacted you? So you've moved from Washington back to West Coast, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was living in Washington State, so still West Coast. But I was working and living up in Tacoma, Washington. And then the pandemic hit and I was working as a teacher at an art museum, so we had kids coming in, and obviously that was one of the earlier things that stopped happening. So that work stopped and the other jobs that I was doing also stopped. So I initially started out kind of thinking that I was just going to go home for a visit and wait for things to blow over, and then things super did not blow over. So I ended up moving back. And I think I've been really lucky for the most part. You know, a lot of people have had a lot of challenges through the pandemic, and I'm blessed to have family that welcomed me back, and a space also. I there's like a little cabin on my family's property that I've been living in. So I'm not even having to live directly with my parents, which has been a blessing in many ways. you know, there is an aspect to the pandemic, I think, that has been hard for a lot of people with disabilities. Just seeing the amount of accommodation that's been made around this pandemic, with similar accommodations that people with disabilities have been asking for a long time, like remote work. Obviously, we're talking over a computer right now. That's possible. You can do that. And people with disabilities have been wanting that for a long time. I've been wanting flexibility around that. And so there's kind of this like edge, I think, that we've all been feeling with the pandemic of like, okay, clearly these accommodations were actually possible. They've just been sort of held out. And then there's this sudden like understanding of illness that's come just now because of the pandemic that I think a lot of people wish had been there before. So there's definitely, there's an emotional side, I think, to the pandemic that is different for people that have been dealing with disabilities for a long time. That's sort of like, okay, I hope that this can be like a learning experience for the world to really see what it's like to be, just be really impacted by the threat of some sort of physical ailment. You know, there's obviously so many days that people who are dealing with chronic conditions have to stay home and have to quarantine essentially. And so that's sort of, you know, hopefully an opportunity for people to get a little compassion around that. But yeah, I think overall, I feel really lucky coming out of this. Well, hopefully coming out of this, hopefully the pandemic is headed in a good direction at this point. But, you know, mostly just the support of my family has been really, really sweet. And yeah, having that opportunity to really focus on art the last year and a half too has been really wonderful. So I'm grateful that I've had the luck that I've had in the last year or so.
Yeah, thank heaven for psychotherapists. Huh?
That's wonderful. No kidding. Very understanding people.
Yeah. So so you've had your own space. The world, that's been such an interesting perspective on the pandemic from the sort of mental health / invisible disability perspective. Thank you very much for that. And so it's also good, I suppose, that you are living on your on a separate place. So you're close, but not too close.
Exactly.
And so what's been the impact of having that year and a half on your art? Actually, you said you've been able to do more. So what's been going on?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, coming out of university, and I kind of plunged right into a lot of work outside of art. Well, sort of art adjacent, but I was not focusing very much on my body of work. And I also had just come out of doing this big thesis for university. So I was kind of a little burnt out and just not really having the time to focus on it. So actually during the pandemic, I think was the first time that I was able to explore doing more multimedia work. I had done one piece before the pandemic with some multimedia aspects, but during the pandemic I really just started looking into that more and kind of seeing what areas I could push with multimedia. So I have like one recent self-portrait that I did that has the papers like ripped and you can see things behind where the rip is, and there's various kind of more 3D elements to that work. There's a couple other pieces that I've started adding 3D stuff to as well. And I think that's been really exciting. I just didn't totally have the space or the time to delve into that before the pandemic and before having this sort of year and a half to myself. So that's kind of been, I think, the largest influence, is just having the space and time to allow myself to push the envelope a little bit more on what I've been working on.
Excellent. And how do you go about doing your work? I mean, I know you interview the people to get a sense for it, and then how do you go about choosing the composition or the, you know, what then, I suppose?
The interview process is really important. So I have kind of like a two-part interview. One part is just I listen to this kind of story and the relationship that the person has with whatever chronic condition or conditions they're dealing with. Because I think that's a really important aspect of just sort of like actually someone sitting there and listening to this person talk about what they've been through. There's not a lot of opportunities for that. So that's kind of where I start. And just listening to people talk about their experience makes my brain start kind of turning and imagining what the portrait can look like. And then, like I said, I do that visualization sort of stuff with them and try to brainstorm what they want the visual articulation to be. And that kind of pulls the composition in for me. I ask people if they want like a full body representation or just focusing on like the upper body. If they're dealing with like back pain or something, we can just focus on that. Or I had one subject that I worked with that just had chronic migraines and this condition called Arnold Chiari malformation. And so that was all just in his skull. So we did like a really close crop of that. So really the condition almost kind of dictates what the composition is going to be in terms of just how much of the person I'm showing. And then I take reference photos with them as well. And that helps kind of formulate the rest of the compositional idea. I want to make sure that people don't have to like sit for me for long periods. So I make sure to take some photos that I can use. And then I just kind of go from there. It's not something that I really think about that much, honestly. I think it all sort of comes from the subject just telling me about their experience and how they want it to be represented. That just sort of figures out everything for me.
Yeah, fantastic. And so obviously I'm assuming that the people who are sitting for you are really appreciative of that cathartic moment. And I'm wondering, what feedback do you get from them and from other people? You know,
I've really only gotten positive feedback, which I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that people feel positively about the experience. I think that it's hard to really explain the frustration of having the pain be so invisible and whatever symptoms people are dealing with being so invisible. It's just like kind of crazy making in a way to be inside your head and feeling these unpleasant feelings and then just looking at your body and not seeing anything. And so I think that in and of itself is sort of an intangible thing for people to just be able to see that their pain is there and that it's valid and real through whatever visual articulation we come up with. That for me, my own experience of that, doing that in my own work, has been pretty transformative in terms of just having that little bit of validation. I mentioned this before, there's so many parts of, especially I think dealing with the medical community and peers that don't understand, that feels really invalidating and kind of like minimizing of the experience of having a chronic condition. And so just being able to have that validation, that visual validation as like a personal thing to look to, has been I think the biggest positive feedback that I've gotten from people, and just, you know, making it seem more tangible and like almost something that you could like pull off your body in a way. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of the feedback I get is just around feeling seen and feeling like there's some way for people to point to the image that I make of them as like, yeah, that's what it looks like. You know, they can show mm-hmm. their family and friends the portraits and be like, this is what it feels like, is to have, you know, these bugs eating away at me or ants crawling on me or mushrooms growing out. And I think that just can be helpful to have a visual for people. We're such visual beings, you know, it's sometimes hard when you're looking at someone who looks healthy to really fully comprehend the things that they're dealing with beneath that. So I think that's been the biggest feedback, is just being able to have the visual is really powerful for people.
Yeah, that's what a gift you offer to them and to others like them, you know, to have the unseen be seen. What a real gift. So we're coming towards the end. Is there anything else that you'd like the listeners to know?
I think that the other piece that I haven't talked about as much is that aspect of just being listened to and having the opportunity to share about your experience with whatever you're dealing with is really, really powerful for people. There's been so much research, psychology research into the impact of being able to even share about your story and your experience as a human for like 3 minutes. You know, there's studies where people have just talked about their lives for 3 minutes and it's made this huge change for them. So I think that, you know, as much as we can give people the opportunity to talk about what they're going through and process it. And, you know, if you have a loved one who's going through something, it's so easy to just be like, okay, we're not going to talk about that. That's a touchy subject. It's emotional, maybe. So I'm just going to talk about something else. But I think we do a disservice in not allowing people to verbally process with one another what they're really experiencing, how they're feeling. And there can be so much healing that just comes through that part of it. That's part of why I have, you know, the two-part interview that I do. I do the initial thing is that I just really want to listen to people and make them feel like someone cares about what their experience has been. So I think that, I mean, as a society, we can just do a better job of that in general, not just with people who are dealing with chronic conditions, but just listening to each other and allowing people to process things is so, so important.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you know someone with a chronic condition, maybe now's a good time to think, actually, I should give them a call and just have a listen and see how they're doing and take those 3 to 5 minutes to be with, not coming from a place of I need to fix it or there's something to do, but just, hey, how are you doing over there? Maybe now's a good time. So thank you for that prompt, Kiri.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just wondering, like, if someone was wanting to get into, you know, the sort of work that you do, what advice would you have for them? Someone who's just starting out doing watercolors and wanting to get ahead.
I think my advice is just do it. You know, I've gotten to the point that I'm at now because of so much practice, so many hours and hours of painting and learning through mistakes. And there's no way to learn without just diving headfirst into it. And, you know, you got to kind of let your inner child out a bit and let yourself just have fun and not have so much pressure on making things look perfect. And just, you know, you got to start somewhere. So I think just diving into it, just starting.
Fantastic. Yeah. Just start, get going and enjoy the process, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Love it. Have so where can people find out more, see more of your stuff?
I am on social media. So I've got an Instagram and a TikTok, and both of those are just curiana.art. And then I have a website as well that kind of has more like writing and info directly. And then there's like a commission contact and prints that I have available on there. And that's also curiana.art, instead of .com or whatever, it's .art. So you can type in any of that, and you can also just Google my name. All of that will come up.
Fantastic. And just to spell out your name for us for a second.
Yes. Kyriana is kind of a weird one. It's K-Y-R-I-A-N-N-A.
And then .art for Instagram and TikTok.
.art and for pretty much everything.
Fantastic. So a real pleasure to have you with us, Kiri. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thanks, Boris.
Thanks for listening to the RebChat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram at RebCatCreations.